Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Filth, dropping in at the top of the episode to let you know that we have got some live shows coming up in Melbourne as part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
That's right. If you didn't already know, how is that possible? If you did already know, thank you for already buying tickets. We're going to do, three shows separate from the podcast. They won't be recorded. They'll be live and loose. Mm.
They will be on the strict dates and times of the only thing not loose about them is when they are. The 7th, 14th and 21st of April, all Sundays, all... I don't remember the time exactly, but you'll know when you're buying the tickets. It'll tell you.
3 p.m. at the Cooper's Inn on Exhibition Street in Melbourne CBD. Guests... will be appearing some previous guests from the podcast that you love from telly and podcasts and shit like that.
Come and enjoy some live laughs on the 7th, 14th and 21st of April.
You can come to one or any of them, or you can get a season pass to come to all three. Makes it all a little bit cheaper. Always a fun time at our live shows. Always love catching up with the Filth afterwards as well. Come on down and check us out and get amongst the comedy festival. Filthycasuals.com.au for all your ticket buying needs. We will see you there. And now, on with today's program.
Next week, an upgraded version of the PlayStation 4 will go on sale. Will Ripley spoke to PlayStation chief Andrew House and began by asking him...
Let's talk about PS4 Pro. First time that anybody's really upgraded a console in the middle of its lifespan. So, why?
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Daslow, and with me, as always...
Ben Vanelli here. We've had a couple of weeks off doing some roving reporting, but now we're back in the studio and everything is going perfectly as usual. We're joined, of course, by our third co-host...
Mr. Perfect himself... Adam Knox.
Adam. Yes, that's it.
Who? What was? And we're back in the room.
That was the hypnosis, Australian hypnosis game show hosted by Daryl Summers.
You're back in the room.
You're back in the room.
That's crazy that it's that because, and we're back in the room is something that is stuck in my head.
Yeah.
You might even say it lives in there rent free.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's an original thought that I've come up with.
It lives in there rent free thinking it's a chicken.
Exactly.
Calling the show You're Back in the Room, it's like that's the thing that you're saying when they're out of the hypnosis.
Yes.
So it's a show about hypnosis and the title focuses on the part that is not hypnosis.
I guess it's reassuring.
I guess.
If it was called like you might get stuck in the room.
Yeah.
Or out of the room.
No, but they should call it you're a chicken.
Yeah. You've been hypnotized.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, I mean, like, thank God you're here is an Australian show and that is a similar sentiment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. You could have called Thank God You're Here. Hey, you're back in the
room. You're back in the room.
But that is at least named after the like instigating phrase.
Yes.
The hypnosis one would have been like, and you're under or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. It's the end. You're titling the show with the end of the act.
Stupid.
It's so dumb.
You would have called a porno I'm coming, would you?
That's a good Thank God You're Here scenario. Like you walk through the door and you've just come out of... hypnosis.
Oh, that is good.
Right, so the guest walks in. For people who don't know, Thank God You're Here, Australian show.
Imagine running your show stupidly.
You've got it's everyone else knows what they're improvising except for the guest comedian.
Yes.
Yeah, so they walk in, they get thrown a scenario and they have to like kind of piece it together.
Yeah.
But so if you walk through the door and it's like, wow, you've just come out of hypnosis and boy, you were doing some pretty embarrassing stuff.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad.
All right. Apply for a writer's job.
Yeah.
With the news. because that was boring as the news.
Yeah, whoa.
And we're back in the room.
And to think I was just about to reach into my bag and give you some gifts that we brought you back from Japan.
Yeah. I've ruined it by being a guy in my mid-30s who thinks the news is boring.
By being a sassy little BR.
Well, we're about to affirm that characteristic because we've got you some toys.
Hey, that's kind of, you were just telling me before we started recording about how you wished you'd have bought yourselves more toys over there because you have more room in your luggage. So the classic toy destination of the beautiful country of Japan.
Yeah. So this is kind of, I didn't actually even get myself anything from this shop. Wow. This has all come from the Capcom store.
Oh, thank you. This is lovely of you.
So have a little look
you.
At these on camera.
Is this an asthma puffer? What is this?
Well, we're not sure.
Oh.
I literally don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It says recovery spray. I think this is like a Resident Evil.
It's the Resident Evil health spray.
So
yes,
there's a whole batch of this kind of stuff in the store that everything else is like labeled like, hey, this is actually like a cologne or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
That one was the only thing that didn't say what it was.
It's cool as well because it says Unitarofa, which I don't know what that is.
Mm.
First aid recovery spray. Unitarofa might be from a game and I don't recognize the name. Copyright Capcom. It has no health information on the bottle itself, no description of what it actually is.
It may say in Japanese because there is a lot of Japanese
on
this box.
So do I spray it somewhere neutral first or spray it directly into my mouth assuming that it's a flavoured...
That was our guess. Our guess was that it's like a breath freshener spray.
Yeah.
But
I could spray it like Dumb and Dumber style, kind of away from my mouth.
Safely. Yeah.
Hold on, let's do that. My guess was that it was either... Nothing comes out.
You gotta prime it.
You need to give it a few more pumps.
Well, that's not my style.
My guess was either...
It's two pumps and that's it, honey.
You know what? I think it is just a vessel for which you may choose the ingredient.
Well, that would make sense for why it did.
It's an empty bottle.
It's an empty bottle.
And we're back in the room.
That's kind of the best result.
Yeah, that makes it... Oh, sick. I'm going to fill this full of booze.
That is good. Yeah, because my guess was going to be either breath freshener or like the, you know, the mist sort of stuff. The revitalizing mist kind of stuff would make sense thematically for what was on that.
Bit of rose hip.
Is the price tag still on there? Because I would love to know what this empty bottle cost me.
Yeah, it is. Are you okay with us revealing that, Nox?
Hey, it's nothing to do with me.
It was 880 yen, so it was like $9.
Wow. Thank you. what a scam they're running over there. That's very cool.
Check out the YouTube video for a little sneak peek of a little
Umbrella Corp notebook
in which
I can write all of my evil schemes. Writing one of the notes that you find in a Resident Evil game where it starts off fine,
but
by the end of this book I'm like, I regret what I've wrought.
Oh, that's a good little project. Check how many pages there are in there and you just write on every one of them.
Yeah.
And it has to get progressively worse.
The diary.
Yeah,
Environmental storytelling.
This is very cool. I don't know why I'm opening this one for the camera because you can probably imagine what the paper looks like inside.
I will say, a lot of Umbrella Corp merch at the Capcom store, they really do assume that you want to play as... you want to role play in your life as the most evil corporation of all time.
Yeah.
It's fitted out memo style as well with a to and from and the date.
Oh, yeah.
That's neat.
So that's very cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
I love these. And then there's a little Chainsaw Man, not Chainsaw Man, the show, the Chainsaw Man from Resident Evil. He's a little standee figurine.
He's got a little base there that you kind of clip him onto.
Yeah. There he is. Yeah. That's so nice. Thank you.
No worries.
We did a little trip to it was in Shibuya, wasn't it? That we went to the Nintendo store and then there was like a jump store, like a Shonen Jump store and a Capcom store. And we both walked through Capcom and were like, oh, this is sick. Let's only get stuff for Nox though.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's kind of hard to get gifts for someone like yourself, Adam, over there, who's similar to us, because it's like you could like every store you go into, you're like, oh, Adam would like that.
Yeah.
You know, at a certain point, you have to go, I'm not going to get him a grab bag of things from across the country.
Yes.
I'm just going to zero in on one specific section of one shop because otherwise I'll just be picking up stuff every half hour
and then disallow myself from buying anything there as a show of respect to him.
Yeah.
On the back of this notepad as well, it's got a phone number that you can call if you have any problems with the notepad, I suppose.
There's an awful lot of disclaimer type
material on the back of this notebook.
What are the ingredients of that notebook?
Yeah.
I'm assuming fish.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Japanese, so a good
probably
chance
peanuts,
it'll be fish.
Usually peanuts, right?
On the front,
traces
it says,
of nuts.
people's health is protected, full stop. Umbrella, with the U is italicized and the two L's are italicized.
Okay.
I don't know if that's the style that Umbrella Corp uses
within
Universe. We are promised the future, comfortable and re-life safety.
Nice.
That's very cool.
That's a great bit of translation.
We gotta call this. We gotta call this number. I would love to know who's on the other end.
Hello, yeah. I'm here to complain about the English on the front of your notebook.
I think as well, anything you write in there becomes canon in the Resident Evil universe.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And then Ada's walked over to me, and she's like, "Damn, you're pretty cool.
You're
Adam.
A handsome
Wait,
fellow."
Wait, I need to know relative to the cost. Is the price tag on? I now need to know what everything cost relative to the price of an empty bottle.
Notebook.
This is the same, 880 yen.
Okay.
Notebook 660.
Notebook what?
660.
660. Wow. Okay. So the
that's a steal for the notebook.
Yeah.
An empty small plastic bottle. The most expensive thing that I bought at the shop.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you're in need of, you know,
read life.
An empty container or re-lifening? Some paper, you know where to go.
Another I think country. you need to put like some kind of like breath freshener in there, and then just like every ep from now on. You just start off the show with a little spritz.
Oh yeah.
So the people know when they're listening, they're getting some fresh dulcet tones down the microphone.
Yeah, I'll put some content in here.
I think nice what you said earlier, Nog, a bit of bourbon or whiskey, right? To like, you know, lubricate the vocal cords.
I mean, me.
Yeah.
Something actually medical. So if there's like a situation, and hopefully there won't be, on the street where someone's like, "Is anybody a doctor?" Mm. You can be like, "Almost."
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then they start screaming because I'm spraying vodka on their
wound. Yeah, what's the shit where you know, do you ever like cut yourself really bad when you're a little kid? The like what's the shit that really, really stings? In that like maroon
antiseptic
bottle.
Type stuff.
You know, you'd like fall off your bike and graze your knee, and you'd be in a lot of pain. And then your mum comes out with that bottle. You're like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine, because you knew that was like so much gonna sting so much worse than the current pain.
I actually never found it painful.
Yeah, that's actually really cool, man.
I never fell over.
I fucked it. I actually fucked it.
I fucked it first.
I fucked it.
Yeah, you wouldn't know the antiseptic guy fucked. It goes to a different.
It actually
hospital.
Said I was the best it's ever had.
Oh, well, thanks for that. These are nice little knickknacks. I've been knickknacking over here.
You've been paddywhacking?
No, well, I didn't get up to paddywhacking. I was trying to paddywhack Dark Souls after playing some Bloodborne.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, damn, Dark Souls is a good game. Remember that? Mm. And went to maybe do some stuff to like get a platinum on that or whatever. But boy, you got to do a lot of weird shit in that game to get that stuff. So didn't do it. But Dark Souls feels stiffer than I remember as well these days.
I went through that big period of playing. Yeah, after getting into Elden Ring, I did Bloodborne, which I loved.
Yeah.
And then sort of went backwards. So I did Dark Souls 3. Still held up great, very similar to Bloodborne without the, you know, Bloodborne mechanics, but like felt fluid enough. Great level design. And then skipped 2, I think, because there was a the HD version of Dark Souls 1, and it was a bit harder to get into.
It's a slower paced thing. I didn't enjoy going back to that as much as Bloodborne, but I've been doing that partly because I get the impression, I never played Dragon's Dogma 1, but 2 comes out on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
And they're of a similar-ish sort of thing. Not really, but a little bit.
Yeah.
But, and I think they've put the character creator out early so that you
they
can...
They did.
Which I'm not a big character creator fan, but if it's going to be there, I do like the move of just like get... You know what? If you're someone that obsesses over this, get this out of the way, and then when the game's released, you're straight in there.
Yeah. No, I thought, and I didn't actually get around to installing that or anything, but think a similar thing where it's like going to the grocery shop before you're doing your cooking.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I've loved seeing some of the stuff people have made in that. It is like a really robust character creator where you can... Handsome Squidward, for some reason, is like the thing people make. Him and Shrek are like the Super Mario 1-1 of like making
silly characters.
Default things.
They're like having a Big Mac in another country. Just getting the baseline of what they're capable of. Yeah.
Yeah.
And people have made very competent versions of those. So
I feel like every character creator now is like, you know, we had the Street Fighter 6 one where people were able to make a lot of crazy stuff. And it feels like they're all trying to really outdo it. Like, you know, if you come out of the gates and you can have like a lot of very memeable characters being created. That's just easy press.
Yes.
Easy free press for the game.
Yeah,
so exactly. It is worth making it so that you can make a little fucked up elephant man.
Someone made Kate Middleton in Dragon's Dogma's character creator, so we finally found out where she is.
Gotta say, was off-grid for sort of all of that and coming home and being like, I have no idea what people are fucking on about here.
The internet has made people go absolutely psycho these days. It's a terrifying world in which we live now.
Yeah.
But don't worry. I can heal us.
I knew you'd love it.
Yeah.
I just knew. It's a little replica thing
from
the game.
You've always been a secret prop comic, Adam.
No secret. I'm proud to think that objects are funny.
Yeah, no, that's true. Objects and farts are always funny.
Dude,
yeah.
If I could put farts in this bottle.
Mini whoopee cushion, you push it down with the thing.
Fuck off, Carrot Top.
Yeah, you could rig it. You could go down to J-Car and rig up a little fucking sound chip thing in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be cool.
That's
just
the ultimate.
Going into an electronic store with that and being like, now what I want is for when I push this down, it makes a fart noise. Money is no object. Yeah. Just tell me what wires and what copper and what circuitry I need to get this going.
Try to get it done, but I don't have the electrical engineering ability, so every time I press it, it goes, happy birthday to you. It's the only one I could find that was easy to put in there.
You figured that out, but then you're in the sound stage with like a catalogue of like thousands upon thousands of different farts, and you drive yourself insane because you can't lock in on the exact perfect one.
You have to get a rotating roster, like natural farts.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Different every time.
Randomized, yeah.
A bank of how many?
How many times am I going to spray it? 7,000? 8,000?
Yeah. Oh, now it's got Wi-Fi, so it's like tapping into a global database to play one off the internet at random
you
every time.
You think $8 was expensive for an empty bottle? Wait until I'm done with this.
Yeah, but then this is like house flipping. Like, we mod it up, then we take it back to the Capcom store and we're like, check out what we've done.
Look.
We want $4 million for it.
Don't have the language to be able to tell them exactly what I've done.
Google Translate working overtime to it's like this can't be what they're trying to say.
Yeah, saying please leave the store, that's it must be on the fritz.
Just learning enough Duolingo to get to the point where I can say, look, it farts now. Not having any other ability to speak. Can't ask where the train station is.
I kind of think they'd like that over there.
Yeah.
I think if you got the right
guy
behind the counter, they'd be pretty into it.
It's just about universal.
Mm.
It's the Mr. Bean of comedy, which Mr. Bean is also. If you want a higher definition fart sound in the future to come from your fart-based video games, you have options towards the end of this year.
Yeah.
One option
allegedly.
At the very least. It's pretty certain at this point. There's been there have been leaks in the for a while now, but like very concrete ones in the last week or so. Digital Foundry's even gotten to the point where they're pretty, you know, they're Eurogamer and stuff. And they're like, it's certain.
They're clear in the schedule.
Yeah.
There's side-by-side comparison video that goes for 8 hours.
A big part of why it's pretty confirmed that the PS5 Pro will be out towards the end of this year, most likely. And the pretty specific specifications of the thing is because they've also put it on their like Sony dev portal thing, a lot of these specs for developers to target.
Right.
Yep.
So that's a big part of why it's like, this is happening.
I do love this kind of stuff where like a company, when they're just in control of it, when they're working on it, you know, it's easy to keep it on lock. You know, it's easy to just be like, hey, only the people that work here know about it.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't going to get out. But then as soon as you start talking to third parties, then it's like, hey, apparently, like you must just be like, God damn it.
Yeah.
The loose lips over at Ubisoft.
Yeah.
It's, so I was reading about it before. I'm not, again, my electrical engineering ability starts and ends with making a bottle fart.
Mm-hmm.
But it basically will have a pretty weird realm of benefit in that it'll be able to do some sort of upscaling type thing like DLSS or whatever is like a big part of what they're doing this for. Yep. Better resolutions at a lower difficulty for the machine sort of thing.
Like 8K.
I've seen people saying they're targeting like being capable of 8K 60 and shit, which no games will actually do.
Yeah.
That's similar to like the PS4 Pro could do 4K stuff, but games still always run at 1080
type of thing. Yeah.
I don't know much about this kind of stuff because my engineering knowledge begins and ends with making a little bottle that says miso horny every time you push the nozzle on it.
Yeah.
But this like AI upscaling thing that I read about, that sounds like a very interesting prospect as things go forward. And like, I assume it's the ability to... Yeah, what? Make it like actually be able to make things look better without necessarily needing that that, hardware in there?
That is what DLSS and FSR and those types of things basically are.
Yeah, it's sort of generating, like filling in the gaps, like blowing it up and then being like, well, if there was a, you know, if there was a pixel there, or if it looked pixelated there, or if there was like, you know, like and tearing and shit, it's like, oh, we'll fill in the gaps, we'll smooth it all out.
Games already use this a lot too. It basically means you can render something at a lower resolution and then have it appear at a higher resolution because it has smoothed out the errors. I mean, again, this is probably the equivalent of going like, cows feed their young through beef. Like, not really, but sort of.
I mean, I love this kind of stuff because I kind of, you don't really hear about this kind of stuff anymore, but I love hearing about like in the early generations of games, the way they would like trick the hardware into doing stuff that they wanted it to do that it wasn't capable of. Like someone was telling me recently, I don't know if I've said this on the show, but in the original Mario Brothers, they'd run out of sprites. So the coins that you pick up, they're not sprites, they're part of the background. And when you walk over that part of the background, it's just triggering a thing to like change that part of the background. So it's not a sprite that you're walking into. It's like a thing, you know, those like workarounds where they were like, well, we want this on the screen.
Yeah.
We've hit the limit. We, you know, these things where you trick the hardware and you just assume now that things are so developed and high tech that there's no need to do that stuff. But hearing that that still happens, it's like you're always going to want to strive for something more than what the current hardware can achieve.
Yeah.
Anything where a little machine is being tricked into doing something it doesn't want to do.
Oh, no.
Like it's getting Chappie to suck you off.
It's all
making a bottle fart.
It's all
that is what I'm talking about.
Tricks still, like, well, for sure. Like every piece of computer...
Yeah.
Computering is all...
Computing?
I think you could say it a little more complicatedly than that.
Yeah.
It's all fake.
But there's not a real Pokemon in the box.
No.
But like, I was going to say, it's like a reverse Game Freak where they're like, no, we should render everything
game normie
uniquely. Yeah.
So
I encountered, I think, the DLSS stuff for the first time in Cyberpunk, where that was a game that was like, we're reaching for more than most people's hardware is capable of, which it ended up being really the case.
It's great. It works really well when it's implemented well, and it means you can run things smoother even though they look better.
Yeah.
Because we were talking in Japan a lot about like we're at this point where most people are kind of off AI because it's being used for creative things that sort of end up being, you know, not very good, obvious that they've been made with AI, put good creative people out of work. And we were like, well, what are the applications of it that a human being either couldn't or wouldn't want to do that is like a, you know, that is beneficial. And something like this is a great example of that. Like if it's able to smooth over those gaps, then it's like, well, that's not taking, you know, work away from anyone. If it's in a hardware thing and it's making it all look a bit better.
It's so enhancing people's existing work.
Yeah. The second thing that sort of fits into that is improving its capability with ray tracing, which again can lighten the load on having to make custom lighting things in there. If you can have just procedural lighting, which is what ray tracing is, like that it will be better. And so it won't mean that... So a lot of it doesn't necessarily mean games will run better.
Yeah.
And it will get into that point again, like with the PS4 Pro, where some will get patched and some won't and whatever. All of that sort of stuff's unclear. But with the ray tracing, the example they said was that, well, some games on the PS5 can do a ray trace mode that is just reflections or just the lighting.
Oh, yeah.
It might be able to do both and things like that. I don't think... It's a weird upgrade, and Sony have made a ton of hardware that they then people question why they've bothered to make it, which this could fall into again.
Well, I think the other thing was that I think the CPU's better, but not heaps better.
It's the same.
Oh, right.
The CPU is the same. But again, look at the Digital Foundry stuff if you want to know the particulars of this. We're not the place for that, but there will be... The RAM is slightly better and is they've improved the amount and made it faster, but in practice it's just to enable these better graphical features, and the CPU might actually be somewhat limited by how much extra work it's having to do with the GPU or something.
Right.
Again, for particulars, go to someone who knows the specifics of this shit. But
go to our
overall,
friends over at DTF.
Yes.
Down to Foundry.
Overall, it's a different sort of thing to the PS4 Pro, where like it's like...
The mid-gen upgrade feels just, like, way less essential at this point.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. With so many fewer exclusives and fewer games that are actually testing, like, the limits of the current PS5, it's like...
But
do we,
and we're at a point where we're getting so into like actual like photorealism anyway that those leaps are less noticeable. And also, I guess this feels kind of almost more like this would just be the thing that is just on the shelf instead of the PS5. So like, if you're buying one new, if you don't have one, you would get this, because I kind of feel like for this to be coming out at the end of the year when you've also said, we don't have any new games coming out for the... Like, if they had...
And we're thinking about the PS6.
Right. If they had timed this alongside Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and it's like, hey, guess what? If you know, it's going to look a little bit better on this, that might have... You know, for me, someone who already owns a PlayStation 5, that might have been the thing that would inspire me to
do
upgrade.
The trade-in.
But by the time it's out, I'll have, you know, what am I going to be playing on this thing that... You know, if you're going to
that you
to
haven't
the back,
already played.
Yeah, if but you're going the to the back catalogue on it.
It, like, it's this is an alternative to a PC of equivalent power.
Yeah.
But it will still probably be cheaper than that.
Yeah.
That's what they're sort of doing.
But, I mean,
here,
this feels more placed for the person who hasn't gone in yet to get in on the PlayStation 5 ecosystem than it does for, like,
it'll
it
be
being
more,
a necessary, like, upgrade for someone who already has a PS5.
Those new versions of the regular PS5 will still exist, and this will be more expensive than those.
Yeah.
And will use the same detachable disc drive thing, probably.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, it's
and, like, 1 terabyte of storage was, I think, the speculation on the machine.
The same as the base one. Yeah. It'll be... Like, there will be games that are patched to run slightly better on it, and they will look slightly better, and the frame, the ray tracing mode will run better on the new one and whatever, but...
I wonder if they've got something to, like, go alongside this, because didn't the PS4 Pro launched sort of alongside Spider-Man, that one that was, like...
So
you sort of do need, like, something, even if it's not going to be the most, like... You know, out of control, amazing looking thing. Like,
I'd imagine their pitch would just be, "This is the most powerful console now."
Yeah.
So, but if you're playing things in like multi-platform games, hey, this is the best place to do it.
This is the one.
Yeah. The thing they said with like no new games was like no new like sequels to existing franchises that are like big. Not even, maybe did they say first party? I can't remember.
That's all it is.
But yeah.
No big first party franchise Sony games.
So like there
until
could be there could be a big third party game where the devs are, you know,
that's
kind
true.
Of aligned with Sony. And
oh, there'll be
out.
a new franchise from an existing thing. Like Santa Monica's working on that sci-fi game that Corey Barlog's doing.
Right.
Something like that will probably pop up. And again, it's like this is such a... I mean, the PS Portal is like selling out everywhere. That some of their hardware has hit. But in similar themed news, they've paused production of the PSVR 2 because the production line was jamming up with how many extra fucking headsets they had that people were not buying.
The
so
new Virtual Boy.
It's fuck. Very
they,
annoying.
They capped it at 2 million was... The thing I read?
I don't know, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
That was the headline. I was like, they've made 2 million and they're not making any more until they sell all of those.
Well, and that's the thing that we were talking about when they said they were working on the PC compatibility with it, is that's to try and shift some of them out more than likely.
Yeah.
So they love to make their hardware. 10 different headphones, some of them in your ears, a new controller, let's keep going, screen on a controller.
Yep.
There's someone working real hard in the Sony hardware department.
Well, I mean, they always were hardware, right? Like, that is their basis. And, like, Microsoft is like, hey, let's try some new software things that we can force people to subscribe to. It makes sense that there are more people in Sony being like, well, we have factories that make this shit.
Yeah.
Let's give it a crack. But if it doesn't work, we'll just stop. stop that one.
It's hard to see what the actual... real world, like, here's the difference between this game on a base PS5 and the pro version until they start showing that stuff. But all of the specification things and the people, what people are saying about the difference in capability between the two, just isn't about stuff that excites me very much. Personally. But I'm still interested to see the comparisons and stuff they inevitably put in.
Yeah, because Ben and I have finally gone in on a piece of software for the Sony PlayStation 5.
Yes.
And I mean, for me, this is the thing that kind of without this game being around makes it hard to get excited for a hardware upgrade is that, this is the first party PlayStation 5 game in a while.
This isn't a first party for
PlayStation.
Well, it's a PS5 exclusive.
Time for a bit. Exclusive, yes. Yeah. Yes. This is the first thing in a while that's hit for me. Like the Final Fantasy 16 and God of War 2, just weren't, like, there's just been a big stretch where I've engaged with them for a bit, but they just haven't really grabbed me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this is the one.
Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth.
Rebirth!
You are back in the room and you've been able to play it. It's such a good fucking game. What do you reckon?
I'm early on. I'm still in the Nibelheim.
I believe it's pronounced Nibelheim.
Yeah, it's Nibel.
I disagree.
I pronounced it Nibelheim when I played the game.
That's the only one it definitely never was.
Yeah, I know.
It's Erig, not Aerith or Aerith.
It's Aero. I know this is probably just like where the story is paced, but I really do love the setup of, like, you know, it's been a few years since the first chapter came out, and just like kicking this one off on like flashback.
Yeah,
really throwing you back into like, here's a bit of like Cloud's kind of origin. Like, it doesn't just like pick up and throw you straight back in. I kind of think that's like such a nice, elegant way of doing it. You're running up a mountain and getting your little credits coming up over that. I just really love the, like, it's such a, like, a classy way of kicking off this thing that is a bit, you sort of go into it and it's like, I haven't picked that other one up since I finished it 4 years ago. Am I going to be sort of a bit on the back foot? But it just does this, like, I love the pacing of it so far, even though I'm not into, like, caught up on the story where it is in, like, current day of the timeline of the first game. But, like, I'm just loving that as a bit of a setup of, like, young Cloud. It's five years before?
Something like that.
Yeah.
There's a gap of 5 years somewhere in that flashback. I can't remember.
Yeah,
because
they're
years.
Like telling the story to each other in the hotel room. Like, yeah, a week or two after the events of the original game, like, they've just walked to this other town.
Long
after.
And sort of great way of like tutorializing you again by like, you know, taking you back to a time when Cloud's younger is like a cool way of doing that.
Yep.
And yeah, there's a great bit where you're like, he's walking around with Sephiroth and then Barrett interrupts and he's like, I mean, the way you're telling this story, this Sephiroth sounds like a great guy.
Yeah.
What's the issue? And he's like, let me fucking finish.
Well, I don't know, man. The way you're describing how the two of you looked at each other, it's pretty hot.
It is funny that there's a bit where he's telling the story and he's like the bit that you're watching is like he's bagging out on Tifa. And then you hear Tifa present day be like, wait, you said that about me? And it's like, why'd you tell her that bit?
Yeah. I like that in the original too. She's like, wait, you went in my room?
Yeah.
You played my fucking piano?
So then you'll never guess. I just sat around talking shit about you for fucking ages.
It is a lucky happenstance that the original game is structured in the exact same way. You finish the Midgar bit and then you hit up a little town and you go, so wait a minute, what's everyone's backstory?
Because I would have assumed I would have assumed if I didn't know anything that was like a thing that they put in to like flesh it all out more, to sort of, pad out the game a little bit. But for the time, that's a crazy thing to do in a game narratively.
Well, and they've spaced where these remakes cover from into well in that this one also is a natural sort of break point where it ends in the original story too.
It's
you're a little further along.
Yes. Yeah. I think I'm like 8 or 9 hours in so far. Again, like, I've played the original, so I know the story, and I think the adaptation is fantastic. It's more, I think, in a high level way, closer to the original than remake was. But again, I'm very relatively early on. I think this. Maybe 25% of the way through if you just barrel through the story.
I think probably not even that, honestly, from where you're at.
And I guess that's true because I have been doing a lot of side stuff as well. So
it adds in some stuff later on as well, I guess. And even like right early on, no spoilers still, but like
there is some
one of the first things you do is like, well, Zach's in this now and that sort of stuff. Like,
I found actually, and again, this is probably knowing the original game, some of the story beats in the first like 3 hours really confusing. Characters getting from places to other places without even telling you how, and a lot of things seemingly being skated right over.
It's playing a little bit with stuff that you would know if you played the original
two,
and then messing with you on that level slightly too, very early on.
Which I was just like, okay, whatever. Like with the previous, with Remake, it'll get explained by the end of the game in a way that is like not necessarily like telling you the secrets of it, but giving you context for why it's structured that way.
And it certainly is doing its own thing on top of being a remake of the original more and more as this one goes on.
Yeah. Which and I think was similar with Remake, right? It certainly ended up in a
Well, all of those whispers and shit they weren't in the first one.
Yeah.
And they were such a huge part with no explanation in Remake 1.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing continues of like, no, there's something else going on. And so there's like a second level of mystery or whatever on top of if this is your first time experiencing the main story of Final Fantasy VII, there are mysteries in that too that it's doing this. So it's like two episodes of Columbo at once.
Yeah. But it's like, it's beautiful.
It looks incredible. It
looks amazing. The scale of the areas, which you talked about not last week, the week before, Nox. Like, the size of the open world sections is perfect, I think. Because like, they could get bloated and it could just be a lot of running around doing fetch quests. But I feel like it's just at the right level where it doesn't get tedious, or it hasn't for me at least at this point. Those areas look great. And the whole time in the background, there is a fucking giant thing from the game, from the original game, that is an iconic piece of imagery where you're like, oh yeah, that's the fucking Junon cannon. You know, and it looks incredible. And the closer you get, the more you're like, oh, they really figured out how to do this. Because in the original, it was so pixelated and like the cutscenes even were just very smooth. You didn't see a lot of detail. But like, getting to Junon and being like, oh, yeah, that's how like the people live in this city. Because it always looked so weird. But
in the original, I remember not really understanding that with Midgar even, like that there were plates above the bottom bit, even though they kind of say it, like you just don't get a visual of it in the same way.
Yeah, you're rarely, or I think, on the top and getting out and walking around.
You can't really.
Which you did in the remake. Yeah, you like go to Jesse's mum's house or something.
Yeah. And you can't convey scale in an isometric viewpoint.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like looking up at it.
Yeah.
Not in the same way that this game fucking does. So like, incredible. It just looks awesome.
Yeah. I know what you mean about some of the controls and movement, where even just in that early bit, you're in the town and it's very like, it's got that very like realistic sense of movement physics that I think Yakuza kind of does too. Like when you're walking around the street, like you will bump into people, and then there's a, you know, there's an animation of them kind of like moving backwards, which kind of feel
you've got a bit of inertia.
You're kicking every table and chair all over the shop. Yeah.
But then when you go running up the mountain, Tifa is just like, it's like she's a dodgem car. Like she's just, and then there'll be things where and again, this isn't an issue, but it is funny to have that level of like perfection when you're just walking around a street.
Mm.
But then a thing where like if you go to push a button or grab something, and Cloud is a few inches away from it, he just will like slide across the ground towards it, which is like, well, what do you want? Like it's a waste of time to have him animate step over. But it is so funny when there's this like level of realism and perfection in a lot of it.
Yeah.
And then you get into this area where all of a sudden, like even when you're holding down the run button, your movement turns into like basically Mario, where the laws of like actual human physics don't apply. Like he's just zipping around.
And the like natural terrain, you can kind of like just go, a little weird on.
Yeah. Like, or like you can hammer the circle button, which is meant to be, getting you to jump over stuff. And then sometimes you'll be able to do a big jump onto a little ledge. Sometimes that ledge is 3 centimeters too high.
But it works because it is this like part realism, and then that stuff that feels very video gamey when you kind of notice that it's working like that. It's not really an issue because that feeds into the whole tone of it, where it is very realistic looking and it is kind of a very self-serious plot, but then it is also very goofy and very anime and the delivery is very over the top. So having that, like something like that happening in A Last of Us would be really jarring, but here it's just like, yeah, this is a video game. Even though this looks realistic, at no point is it trying to pretend that it's not a video game.
Cade Sith is hanging out with you for a lot of the game. Like, it's hard to be like, oh, that doesn't look real.
Yeah.
You know, like...
And it's like, because you are still in the very self-serious bit. Like, there isn't a lot of that goofy stuff yet, but... Very quickly, yeah. You're getting chocobos and like little baby ones that are like, follow me to this bench.
The tone is great.
Yeah.
Like the humor, especially later on, is like some of the best that games have had for some time. Mm. Just in like...
Wait, were you frequently laughing out loud?
I genuinely was. It had me frequently laughing out loud.
Oh, yes.
I don't want to say any of the particular stuff because I don't want to spoil anything, but there are moments that are just so fun.
Yeah.
Like such, so like campy.
And
joyful.
Mm. Someone's talking shit about someone and they're behind them, aren't they?
No, they're in the room.
And it's just like having a soldier be like, okay, this is a good example. A dance battle can be one of the least funny things that you can see in something.
Yes.
Or it can be quite a lot of fun if it's set up right.
Yeah, the first one has
the first one has the great dance battle. Yeah.
All that sort of stuff just worked really well for me.
Yeah. There's been a few, like little background lines or, like you're running around at one point gathering some soldiers together and you're like often interrupting them doing something else.
Yeah.
And it's like, the captain's here. There's a lot of that stuff.
Like eight different times people were like, what the fuck do you want? Oh, no, the captain.
Yeah.
And it worked on me every time.
Yeah, it was great.
People are just like coming their pants over the fact that Sephiroth is in town. Like, same as the first one, I had to turn off it like automatically subtitles the game itself, but it also does that log of everything that's being said in the background is like appearing on the side of the screen, and I had to turn it off because there just is, and this is like a good thing about the game, there just is so much of it. Like the towns feel so alive because like every crowd that you walk past is saying something interesting, something believable, but it just is like when that is all appearing on the side as text, it's like, this is like covering half the screen.
That's a good point.
Works as audio, like it makes the town feel so lived in, but it's like, I don't need to stop and read every single... I like just kind of...
Yeah.
If I don't catch all of it, that's kind of the point.
Because you do notice a bit of repetition in it, which it's like, oh, well, the size of this game, that's absolutely fine, and I don't mind hearing the same line again in the background. But, when it's like a list of repeated phrases, I think I agree. Yeah.
And the music is just... It's truly incredible. Even when... Ugh. Every time you get into a bit that starts to feel like, oh, okay, this is just like sort of, a generic-y... action music kind of score, then like a weird little synth line will come in. It's like every time you start to think like, this is the one where they kind of like, took a bit of an afternoon off, then it does something that is like so unexpected and interesting.
The
and
way
creative.
It like riffs on different versions of the original's music and builds on them is really well done to add to stuff that like is very well known and very classic, and to then like legitimately improve on it in a lot of ways. The way the music transitions from like the just sort of world music to then you're in a fight, but it kind of turns into the fight music of the same open world music,
right.
And then it transitions back.
Yeah.
It's all done so well.
It's got that thing where like it all feels so organic that I kind of feel the same way about it so far as I did about Tears of the Kingdom. It's truly hard to imagine a team of people having worked on this.
Right.
Like, it feels like an alien artifact that just kind of, like, appeared perfectly formed.
When you get to, like, the sort of bigger moments in the game too, it really knows how to, pull it out for a minute and then, like, oh, shit, here's this thing, and then bring in the, like, oh, fuck, it's that theme, and, like, all of those moments are done, like, maybe a little melodramatically or whatever, but in a super fun way that fits the tone of the overall game, so I'm, like, all for it.
And the combat, of course, great.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I feel like the... what is it called? The folio stuff? That wasn't in Remake, was it?
Folio.
Yeah, so you're like combat folio where it's basically your branching upgrade stuff.
Oh, yeah, that stuff's new. Yeah, they've got like that new machine at your like rest stops that's like the weird kind of purple.
Yeah.
Yeah, what is that called? Is it the folio
folio,
like some book word?
But yeah, but you can upgrade it at a bookshop as well.
Yeah.
Not just there, like the purple jukebox. But and that's maybe a bit much. Like I don't need all of that upgrade stuff. And I feel like it takes away from the materia. because there are literally some abilities you get through that that are like cast an ice spell without using any mana points.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, okay, but that like that takes away from the mechanic of the combats
and
the
having mechanics to like, of the combat yeah, ration yourself. There.
You don't really have to think about it too much as well, because you just kind of put points in what's into, or I was just putting points into what became available.
Oh, I'm totally doing that.
Yeah,
but it's just conceptually, it's like, oh, I don't know that this was necessary.
Well, I agree, like, because yeah, it's not even really adding another layer of strategy or whatever.
No.
To it. You're just kind of going through it. The most interesting thing that comes out of there is the like group abilities.
Yes.
That it's
the
worth
synergy.
It took me too long to figure out that there are two different types of the synergy attacks.
Mm-hmm.
One that you choose through the menu and one that you only do by like holding R1 or whatever
yes.
it is and then
yes.
pushing the face button. So
you're like combo.
Yeah.
And are they new?
Yeah.
I feel like they're new.
They're new and you get a bunch of different variants on them depending on who's in your party.
Yeah, because like if you hold L1 with like say Barrett and press square, you activate like a little iron skin defense thing.
Mm.
But like I'm just not clear of like there's so many options in
there's
combat.
There's a lot of different.
Like,
it is assuming it's sort of tutorializing. Yeah, it's sort of tutorializing you, but it is also assuming that you've obviously that you've played the first one, but also that you've played the first one like quite recently.
Yeah,
like
it doesn't
do like a full reset of like. Like it eventually teaches you about the maybe using abilities or maybe the limit break thing, but it's pretty late on. And I kind of in the battles I'd been doing, I was like, oh, that's right, I can do these. And so by the time it told me, I was like, no. I mean, I've figured that out. Some of this other stuff I'd like a bit more clarity on.
Yeah,
it's worth messing around with a bit, maybe doing some of those like. That fucking Chadley guy's
what a chat he is though.
his challenges.
Yeah.
It bothers me how this isn't a spoiler. He creates that second AI girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's like, I made her, and then spends the rest of the game being pissed off at her. Like, whoa, what's wrong with you? Why'd you...
Chadley.
The combat is... There's like quite a lot going on that's worth diving into. Because then you can also like... add little modifiers to like your weapons too, which I ended up just sending all of them to auto.
Yes, same. Which I think there was some weapon upgrades in Remake, but you could also do the same thing. You'd just be like,
I probably did.
Auto upgrade to balanced, auto upgrade to like, you know, defense for your defensive people.
Something about having a deep menu screen that's just got a bit down the bottom that's like, push this to just do it automatically. And in my head, I'm like, so you're admitting that this is pretty inessential. You're admitting that the game could just do this for me. And there's when it's like optimized choices, it's like, well, why don't I just do that?
I'm excited for you guys to finish it. Maybe we can do a little sealed section about like, there's plenty to talk about with all of the story stuff that happens later on. But
I'm pumped to, it's such a shame though that like I haven't finished Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. I feel like there's another couple of games that I've started already this year that I haven't finished.
Mm.
But this is going to be the one that
this is definitely like Persona 3 I'm really enjoying. Mm. Yakuza obviously want to finish as well. They're very easy to take a pause and come back to because they just are turn-based. There's no like... This is like as we're talking about with the controls and the combat. This is really one where like once you're in, you do need to just like lock in and not take any significant breaks because you come back and you're like... It's really like
take
6 months off and come back and like bump it down to easy while you just work out what the fuck's going on.
Right.
Again.
There's a fair few things that you got to have in front of mind with like how different characters even play. Like it took me a while to recall like, oh, right. Like after when Barrett starts reloading, if you push triangle or whatever the overcharge button is,
oh, that's right.
He'll like charge that a bit as he reloads. So there's a timing thing. And like the way all the Aerith's like little circles that she summons work and all of that type of stuff. There's a lot going on,
which
and it's real good.
I think, the point I'm at now, you've been forced to use certain characters or like your party's been split. So if you think you're like, oh, I've got my three main characters here that are my party, you'll get split up and then you'll have to use the other two and you'll get refreshed on their combat.
It'll do that a bit throughout the game too.
Yeah.
It's really cool, like all the detail in it of like, every character has their own little animation for sitting on the benches to rest.
All
of that stuff. It's such
even
a
just little
game.
Things like you're always. Well, I assume, well, at least in the early bit, you're always moving Cloud through the overworld. through, right. like when you're just walking around. But it puts you in a point where Sephiroth is your party leader. So when you go into combat, you're controlling him to begin with.
Mm.
And so going from moving Cloud around to battle starting and then it whipping around and showing you, you know, putting you in control of Sephiroth and then you finish the battle and you whip back to Cloud.
Mm.
That should, you know, that just all really, you would think that that would be very like confusing and, you know, the camera would, you know, like it doesn't, it's not really jarring at all. No. Like it just works. Like it's so smooth.
I think you can rearrange your party to have anyone be your sort of lead person, but I also didn't even
Can you make a different leader?
In combat, I think maybe when you're walking around, it has to be Cloud.
I'm not. I think. That's what I mean. Yeah, in combat, you definitely can, but I think you can, because you kind of go through at least a point throughout the story where a lot of the people are the person you're walking around as.
Yeah.
So I think you can make, but I didn't try it because it's Cloud's world. We're just living in it.
Yeah.
Cloud Strife.
Good game.
Good ass game.
Really good game.
Speaking of sort of open world type games.
Oh, yeah.
There was a demo that came out yesterday for Sandland.
Yep.
I didn't like it at all, but I think it's because the demo is just weirdly thought out, at least in part. It plonks you into just this open world section with zero context and instruction that only goes as far as these are the controls.
Yeah, no story context,
no quest to do, no like current like objective marker anywhere on the map or anything. It's you
not
just
like
sort
you
of
come in, not like you see a cutscene that's out of context. You literally
it just dumps you.
It just dumps you. It pumps you and dumps you.
Yeah.
You.
It just tells you to hook someone up to a lie detector.
What?
Sanderlands.
Kyle Sanderlands.
Oh, God.
I see.
One of Toriyama's.
A 10-year-old reference plus.
One of Toriyama's worst characters, I have to say. I don't know what he was smoking that
completely
day.
Completely unrealistic. I mean, no one will be that evil.
RIP and all, but honestly, man.
Wait, Kyle Sanderlands is dead? Woohoo!
That gold microphone is very anime villain, to be
it
fair.
It really is. Yeah. He might be the most anime person in Australia. Not in terms of Intuit, but just like as a character type.
As a character, He's a Don Corneo.
You fucking think we're so different, you and I? We're not so different, you and I. It's just like this kind of blank feeling open world that...
It feels like a tech demo more than a demo.
It felt a lot to me like if you were like at an E3... And someone sort of just brought you in and went, "Yeah, this is just a slice of the game."
But they've given you a bit of spiel beforehand. I didn't play this yet, but I've kind of had this feeling about the game since we first started seeing it. That art style looks great. Obviously, it's the great man. But I just kind of had this feeling like it'll just kind of be. It kind of looked like a lot of those Dragon Ball games where they should be good and they look great, but they just there was that one that was what's it called? Asymmetrical multiplayer one. Which cool concept, great characters, but apparently was just like no good.
Mm.
So it sort of seemed a bit like that to me.
I went off and you have some little vehicles in Pokeballs basically that you can summon.
In capsules.
Drove around for a bit looking for things in the environment that seemed like they were points of interest, which some of them were, but they were just like... a little camp that had some chests that had items that I wasn't really sure what they were for, and like a radio tower that I didn't have the items to activate. And it was like, this radio tower will give you some things on the map to look at, but I don't have the stuff to boot it up, so all right. Kind of fighting some enemies out there. There's some dinosaurs and some guys and some people in suits. A couple of sort of boss ones that brought up a meter.
Like a big
crocodile and a big scorpion and a guy in a suit.
Yeah, like an alpha dinosaur and a mech guy, I think. Yeah.
And then you fight them with this not great feeling combat where when you're in your vehicles, they have a couple of guns or whatever that you can aim and shoot. That are pretty, you know, just point and pull the trigger and the health bars will start to move down. There's not much that feels very good about it.
Yeah, there's like a big... I was using like the sort of... what do you call it?
There's a tank
like artillery
mech
gun
and
sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And well, I think each of them has like a strong attack and a... like a machine gun of the machines?
They sort of change... like the motorbike has like a shotgun and a machine gun.
Yeah, yeah.
The mech suit thing has a big punch and a machine gun.
Right.
And there's a tank that has tank shells and the machine gun.
But it felt very old. It felt like an older game. And again, probably a game that I would just play the demo of, where it's like, oh yeah, you kind of drive around, you shoot the dinosaurs and you shoot this. But then, and it's like a big, bare, empty open world.
Yeah. It's a desert. It's a big desert. And I don't think the actual sort of environment looked at all good. The characters look nice with their like cel shading and stuff.
Yeah.
But the actual sort of desert environment just looks quite... not barren in a deserty way, barren in a dull way.
In a game that's not finished way.
It doesn't match the art style of the characters either to me. Like, it looks...
No, it is similar to, like, a Dragon Ball Z Kakarot or something, where it's, like, a similar art style is applied to the world, but, like, they're not going to curate every last little...
It's not super consistent. Yeah. This is so brutal for this to, like...
Yeah.
Come out when it is in relation to his passing away, and it to like not be very good, and reviewers having to go like, very good.
The
thing
is,
I
could imagine
the Great Man, but...
in the actual game, I think that I'm open to the idea that this is just a poorly constructed demo.
Yeah.
Possibly, because then the other form that you're when you're actual the little demon boy,
mm-hmm. Beelzebub,
you're punching and you've got a second punch.
Yeah,
because that's the thing. The story of the manga is it's great. It's a great story. It's a cool world. So maybe that'll carry a lot of it. I don't know if it's like a straight adaptation
or if it's
a continuation or.
Well, I think it's an adaptation because, like you mentioned, like, you know, the King of the Demons and stuff,
right.
And, you know, the water. And yeah, like there was a bit, like you can go into some ruins and so you got to get off your vehicle and, like, but even that, it's like, okay, so you go into like a big stone corridor and there's like a scorpion and you punch him and then you go left and there's some like iron ore on the wall that you punch, and then you go right and there's another scorpion, and like there was no direction and there was nothing propelling me anywhere, right.
Which
really.
Again is a big demo part, like there literally isn't the quest that you would have at this point in the game, you'd assume. But then also in those little bits of combat, it just didn't feel very fun. It was very point and shoot, and then I didn't feel like I had enough ability to sort of dodge and stuff to make it feel interesting. But then also those story bits that are there as you're going around, there's three of you, Beelzebub, someone called the thief,
mm-hmm.
and another guy. The dialogue they were having with each other I didn't like, and their voice acting was really bad and separated from each other.
They
didn't sound like they were talking to each other. They sounded like they recorded them completely separately.
It sounds
with
like
very
more
different
early access
direction
than
between
demo
them.
You know, like it's like a year away from being out, and it's like, okay, I can see what they're, you know, I can see what they're building here.
If this was a year out and they were like, here's a little taste. Yeah, maybe. But even then it's like, oh, I don't know that this tastes good.
I still think that it could be better than the demo makes it sort of seem, because it just felt like getting thrown in the deep end and it was like a bit annoying.
Right.
But the deep end was quite shallow.
But you also don't love the combat or the voice acting.
The voice acting was the biggest thing, where that being a little annoying and getting like repeated lines often and all that sort of stuff. I hate that thing of when someone's like, there's one bit of dialogue where they're saying, well, the King of Demons was the strongest in your village. And then the second one is like, so who would have been the second strongest in your village is how you would say it. And it's like, I want to know, who was the second strongest in your village? Like he was bringing up the concept for the first time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it
just very disconnected and just not that
poorly. Well, yeah. Well, poorly phrased. Yeah.
You can tell that it's recorded out of order.
Yeah.
When's that out? It's out
April.
Yeah.
Okay.
End of April sort of thing. Yeah. I don't know if maybe what other people's thoughts are about the demo.
I had a look because I was so disappointed. And like, yeah, some people have just watched footage of it and have been like, oh, that looks cool. And I think that because I played it on the PlayStation.
Yeah. I did as well.
Some people played it on Steam or on PC and like, they could like turn up ray tracing and like a lot of the screenshots look like very different to how it looked for us, I think, with like, you know, like beautiful sunsets and lens flare and detail to the environment that just wasn't in that demo. It was very flat. And so some people, I think, maybe playing it on PC had a better impression. But
I've heard a lot of the same stuff, though, from people who've played the demo of like, what the fuck am I doing?
It's a bit
weird.
Why
is it not like you should... Yeah, you can't assume that I know what I'm doing because it's a demo. I don't.
And honestly, it's even just one screen away from them explaining, hey, we're not going to give you any quests. You'll learn more about them and that, whatever.
This it is just a little taste of what it feels like to drive around.
Feels
so just,
odd.
Do that.
Yeah, I think the very first screen is this is a combat demo where you can try out this, this, and this. But it just, that's not enough because it's not a normal demo.
No, and if the game has a better foot, it's not put it forward with this. This isn't so whatever. But I'm still open-minded about the full thing. I hope that the demo is not representative of the full game because obviously it is sort of a weird thing that is demo specific.
Well, I played a game while I was away with a cool art style that was also a lot of fun to play.
All right.
That's the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
It's called Euphoria, U F O U R I A.
Okay.
Euphoria.
Letter U, number four written out.
Euphoria.
Yeah, if an alien is can't stop shitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. UFO Uria.
Yeah.
UFO Ria. Does it have but then there's another U. Yeah. Fuck, that's a weird
one. Does it have anything to do with UFOs or just four?
No, this is high school kids taking drugs, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Getting their baps out.
The boredom in your voice.
Yeah.
Well, it's only because I was holding myself back from doing it.
Why hold yourself back, man? Get out there, live life.
Yeah.
Euphoria 2, the saga.
Euphoria 2, the saga. So Euphoria was a game on the NES by Sunsoft. Sunsoft went through a big stretch of really going for it with all their little mascot guys. And they made a few games with this little crew of these four pals. A lot of them were puzzle games. A lot of them never came out in the West. And this is a continuation of that. It's a puzzle platformer where you are switching between four little characters. And it's got a really cool, updated, obviously it's a pixel art game back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's got a really cool, almost, the Yoshi's game, a really crafty kind of aesthetic to it.
Is this, the newish game? What is this on?
This is on Switch and Steam, and then I would assume PlayStation and Xbox as well. I assume it's out on in fact, I know it's out on Xbox at least. It's a continuation of that series. And it is, we were talking about the Mario versus Donkey Kong game recently and how the look of that was just so generic, updated, modern. This is kind of the thing that I sort of wish they would do more with that style of thing. If you're updating something rather than just go for the generic here it is all rendered. Giving it some sort of interesting, crafty, vibey kind of aesthetic.
Yeah, getting some an illustrator or something to come in and be all right, here's a slight twist on it.
It's kind of Yoshi's Island-ish, very pastel-y, goofy looking little character designs. And you're just kind of, you're walking around. It's sort of you have these gated areas that you can't get into until you find another one of your little buddies that, one of them can swim and just all that kind of stuff. And then it's sort of rogue-likey in the sense that each little, it's side-scrolling, but then each time you go through the gate into this area, it'll be sort of slightly different, but a rotating, one of maybe five different sort of layouts. Because you are backtracking a lot, so it's just kind of this nice thing where you're, just because you're having to go back through this area, it's not going to look exactly the same. It'll be changed up sort of ever so slightly.
Mm-hmm.
And you're having to get coins to unlock items out of a vending... you'll find one of your little friends and he's like, I'm not going anywhere until you get me a fucking drink from the vending machine.
Ugh.
And then it's like, guess what? The drink costs $3,000. So you're like... So you're going for a little walk and getting your little coins and finding your little hidden areas and stuff. It's really fun. It's really charming. It's got great goofy music. It's got just the weird sort of 90s Japanese mascot character design that is so up my alley.
Yeah, there's a little duck guy, kind of looks like Sanrio-esque.
Little duck guy, little kind of person dressed up as a cat, a little ghost.
Oh.
And then I think the other one is maybe an alien? I forget. They're all really kooky looking.
Yeah.
It's a really fun, switch your brain off, relaxing little lie in bed before going to sleep platformer vibe. would be great for kids, maybe as like an early game, or maybe not necessarily first game, but like, yeah, a lot of
cozy vibes.
Cozy vibes.
Definitely cozy vibes.
A lot of
vibes.
Fun dialogue with, you know, the writing being like very silly and, yeah, very charming and endearing.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And it's like a really nice approach to like, yeah, bringing that kind of era of stuff rather than just like straight up remaking it or porting it or whatever. It's like cool to dip back into this thing. Like I recognize these characters. I'm sure I saw the box art back in the day somewhere, maybe in a video store or something. But but yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. I don't think it's, I haven't really seen it get much.
I've never heard of it.
No, neither.
Yeah, the trailer showed up for me somewhere and then, yeah, it came out. I think I saw it on a shelf while we were in Japan. Mm. And I was like, oh,
wait, did we go to Japan?
You haven't mentioned it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, it must be out here early. And then, oh, no, it's just out.
So
just kind of, it's obviously like not a, you know, hasn't had like a big release. But yeah, I think it's definitely worth checking out. Like, yeah, watch some videos, watch the trailer. If you like the tone and feel of that,
yeah,
I think you'll be into the game. Yeah, you'll know immediately from looking at it whether it's up your alley.
Yeah,
very Kirby.
It's very like
a,
yes.
It's
yes.
a very just like it's not looking to punish you. It's not very taxing.
Yeah,
but it is a lot of fun, and you just get like swept up in the world, and it's a nice little bit of escapism.
Yeah.
Mm.
The reason I made a face that made you stop talking is because you said it's not taxing, it's not punishment, and then my brain went, "Yeah, taxes are punishment."
Yeah.
But I had to not say that because it's not what I believe.
Well, the doing of them is.
Yeah,
having to do
the filing
taxes,
of them is punishing.
Sure, it hurts, yeah,
but it's
contributing
important
to your society is it's important.
I want roads.
Yeah. Well, I contributed to my society. Well, that would be the case if I lived on Mars,
right?
Because I played a game that was set on Mars where you contribute to society in a way.
Sure. This. So, as the most recent Playdate owner of the three of us, this is like the first real something you've gotten out of it from how you've talked about it, I would wager to say.
Yeah, I played a couple of the first season games or the first wave of games that get released. I spoke about it on the show. I was like, having come to it so late, I was kind of annoyed that it wasn't just all there for me to play because everyone had already played everything. But yeah, I dipped in on those early ones that are like kind of just a display of the mechanics and how to use, you know, using the crank in an interesting way.
Yeah, there's like 12 of them overall, I think.
Yeah.
It was like 2 a week over 6 weeks.
Yep.
Something like that. And of course, they're a mixed bag. There's a couple of great little puzzlers in there.
Yeah.
There's some that you have one little run of and you're like, okay, I don't need to.
Yeah.
And then a fair number of games on their like official Playdate store that they've since released.
Oh, yeah. You could sideload stuff on it very easily from day one. And then they've now added a store that has a lot of that stuff on it. So you can get it like natively. It just gives you a QR code to scan. You link your card, and then you can just like scroll on there and get them. And they're also doing a very good job of like you get on there and they're spotlighting certain ones.
Yes.
And so this game that you're talking about was like, I think they announced this or they talked about this when they first announced the whole console.
They were
like, hey, we got the great man working on something for
us. Yes. So this is Lucas Pope, who created Papers, Please, which was a massive indie hit and a very, you know, an artful game and a thoughtful game, and it had something to say. He then created Return of the Obra Dinn, which was like one of the great detective, deductive reasoning games
of the
past few years, or like 5-6 years now, I guess. Fantastic game, really intelligently made.
And made before there was anything out there about the Playdate, but is very much in the same
old PC style.
This sort of like...
Yeah, couldn't run on the Playdate, but visually, stylistically...
But of course this was up his alley because it's that very like...
And
yeah.
Papers, Please as well was like, you know, 2D, did a lot with that, limitation, but... Yeah, so this new game is called Mars After Midnight. It was, like a purchasable game. It was like $6 or something, I think, through their store. Like you say, Tommy, you just log into your account on a browser and give it a purchase. Or I think just, link your card and you can just buy it on the Playdate, which is very handy.
Yep.
It is similar to Papers, Please. It is... So the setup is that, you're on Mars, there's an Earth colony, and then there's an Off-Worlders colony. You're in the Off-Worlders colony, you're a three-eyed alien, and the setup, which is like really good, it's like a nice cinematic For a 2D black and white thing, it's very well shot, you know, well edited, well cut together.
Cool.
There's like some kind of shop during the day, some like storage place or whatever. And then midnight hits and the shutters go down and they come back up again and it's like a community center. And so you run the community center and the first thing that you do, which I've only done like the first little session, it's anger management for Cyclopses. And so you're like, oh, okay. I can only let Cyclopses in. And so like your first little screen of the game is like a window shutter that you can like open with the crank and close with the crank.
Mm-hmm.
And so you like see a knock on the door and you open the crank and there's like an alien with three eyes. And so you're like, nope. And so you close the crank. And this obviously all this mechanic stuff is being like explained in text and shit.
Yeah.
Or you open it and there's a Cyclops. And so you hold down A and you let him in. And then they come in and they eat some pie. Okay. And then they have a drink and they go into like the room to wait for the session to start. And then you've got and this is similar to Papers, Please. Now it's like time management and finicky sort of stuff of like, okay, so before the next person comes, you've got to clean up the table with the pie on it. So you've got to like use your tentacles left and right to like lift up the plates, move the pie over, sweep the stuff underneath using the crank, put the stuff back down. There's a diagram on the wall of like the plates go here, the pie goes here, the cake, you know, server goes here.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're doing all of this and someone's going to knock on the door while you're doing that. But you kind of need to do that because you want them to eat some pie because then they have a drink and they pay you for the drink. So
right. You're
building up some money from getting all this done.
But the pie is free.
Yeah, I think the pie is free.
I know what I'm doing when I'm there. What would I like to wash it down with? I've got water at home. Don't worry about it. Don't worry.
I'll just create extra saliva and then drink that.
I'm not thirsty. I've got this spray.
So you're kind of doing that. It's like not too hard. But you are balancing it with then answering the door and checking to see if they've got one eye.
Do they have to be like angry as well if it's anger management?
No, it's not that specific. Right. Yeah. And so that is sort of the first thing you're doing. You're like letting people in or turning them away. If someone comes in, you're cleaning up after them. You're trying to get as many people to like, buy some stuff on the way through. Because then, once you get, I think, six people in that are like correct, then... Yeah, there's a little cutscene. Your little robot friend, like, kind of goes in and, like, does the session with them. And then, on the way out, you sort of, like, see them sort of... it sort of tallies up the amount of money that you make. So you're like, bing, 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 bing. Okay, like, I've made, like, $20 or whatever. And then you get to sort of choose what's next. And there's a bit more going on of, like, all right, next you can choose what kind of session. And you can see on a map how many people will attend that session.
Mm.
And your, I think, overall goal is to cure like 72 Martians of their whatever, you know, their issue. So you're like, all right, the next one's like flinching flea blops. And the way that you do this is that you need to buy a horn because then... when you're doing the opening the window thing, you're going to do a horn at people and if they flinch, then you let them in.
Right. Mm. But a flea blob can have as many eyes as it wants.
I believe, yes, exactly. But
if it's a steady flea blob, then like, brother, you're just here for the pie.
Yeah, I'm shutting that window down again.
Okay.
And so, for that mission and before you selected it, like tells you like, for this, you will have to buy a horn. So you have to have earned enough money from your previous one to like, you know, get that horn. And I got that horn. But you also choose, I think for all the successive missions, like what kind of food you're selling on the table or you have on the table, what kind of drink that you are having that you're selling. And it's like, it will give you like a dollar amount. So again, you're like, choosing this, seeing how much money you can make. Mm-hmm. But I assume, and I haven't done the second mission yet, like maybe cleaning up this different... more expensive food will take longer and you know, that kind of thing. Not everyone will like that kind of drink. But that's the basic sort of flow of the game at this point. You're opening, you're letting people in, you're cleaning up and you're hoping they get their flinching cured or whatever.
Yeah.
And going sort of area by area around the Mars colony and I really enjoyed it. It is kind of small, like it's there's a lot going on for how small the screen is.
Right.
Right.
But I feel like by the end of that first sort of mission, I'd got into the swing of it. Everything was coming second nature. All the cranking and the thing, like, yeah. Mm. I feel like it really made sense and it was sort of physically, I'd sort of got it down pat.
And this is the cool thing about all these, like, Playdate games too, is that, like, they are all kind of perfectly designed for just an afternoon. Like, this is, like, $6, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, if all you get out of it is your one, two afternoon sessions.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine.
Am I right in saying as well that you can play Playdate games just on a computer?
Yeah.
With their like Playdate emulator that they have themselves. So you can buy this and play it without a Playdate. Is that right?
I don't know if you can
That's the bit.
I think you can only... Maybe you...
I don't know. Maybe you need a Playdate to enable that thing.
Yeah, I'm not... Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because then, yeah, like I think... if you connect a controller, you can like, it'll be like, okay, so the crank is the analog stick and stuff
Yeah, you can definitely do that. I just don't know if you'd need a Playdate for that or not.
Yeah, because like, I know lots of people who are keen on this game specifically who couldn't get a Playdate.
No, so I mean, they're still quite...
They've caught up now, I believe.
They have.
They are like, you order one and you get it like now.
Okay.
Like they've fulfilled all the pre-orders. So like they're
Release the dock.
Yeah.
Release that goddamn little,
I check every now and again to see if that docks, because I'd love to have that thing sitting on a desk.
Yeah.
Looks good.
So great game. I think it's a perfect Playdate game and a great indie game and like just the best use of this handheld possible.
Cool.
Yep.
Like such a obviously intelligent creator and keen for a proper game, quote unquote, a proper game from him. But
yeah, from him, yeah. Because on the Playdate, like Bird Story, is it called?
Yeah, a little RPG.
That was probably my favorite out of those. But
Yep.
That had a lot of depth to it for... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I thought that was cool.
And I think, yeah, like, intro included, probably playing the first mission was like 25 minutes.
Okay.
Tops.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's a fair few of them. Like, and like you say, sit down for like a solid afternoon and you probably can finish this.
No backlight in it, so once the sun's down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to chuck a lamp on.
That's good. No, pilgrim style.
But so this is the first time I'd really gone in since I got it and charged it up to 100%, unplugged it and was like, okay, just make a cuppa, come back, sit down, play some Playdate. And the battery was like 20%.
What?
And so I looked this up and a lot of people have had this. Where either it is either it charges really, really slowly, or the display of the battery level is incorrect.
Ah.
So it's like it didn't charge to 100% and then you unplugged it and it showed you it was charged to 20, even though you left it charging overnight.
Yeah, right.
Like it's saying that it is at 100 and then you unplug it and it's saying 20, but it's actually at 100.
There's so, a few things like that with the hardware of the Playdate where, like, the first one I got, the crank was fucked.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
And yeah.
Like...
Might be worth hitting them up, because as I say, now that they're caught up...
fucked crank as well. Like, it was back before they were caught up, and immediately they were like, hey, we'll send you another one. We'd love for you to send that one back, though.
All their videos are like, they're a small team, and they're very, like, you know, forward-facing and, like, pretty transparent about stuff. Like, I imagine if you hit them up, they'll...
Yeah, I emailed them last night, but it's probably a time difference. So
I'm looking at your phone with this email too. I don't think the photo of your penis is going to help much.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it would like make them feel, you know, dominant over me.
I thought it was 100% and then the girl I was with said it's only 20.
No, but so, They've
been good with hardware support stuff.
Yeah.
And I do think that when I looked this up and other people had said it had happened, they had had quick responses and were like, yeah, we'll just replace it. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, like there were a couple of issues in the early run of the production, but whatever.
It's cool to have this out because, I'm keen to see what they do next if they kind of go for another couple of coups of like getting a... You know, getting a kind of well-known indie person or now that everyone's kind of got theirs and if they do that series again, kind of everyone will be on the same page that's got one and getting them all at the same time would be cool.
That would be cool to have another batch. But if the choice was that or they get two or three people who are, like well-known indie creators, I'm happy to wait. you know, for another experience like this where I was like, oh, this is a great game. You know, this is so well thought out and suits the
hardware.
And
of any handheld or, like, device or console, even if you're not playing it, it's the one that, like, just looks really good sitting on a shelf.
Yes.
It's a really vibey piece of
equipment. It's a cool little gizmo. That's why that stereo dock that's meant to be a speaker and all of that. I would love to be able to
Have it sitting on the desk.
That's it, yeah. Like, if I can leave it in there and hopefully it's charging.
Because I was going to play music and I was going to have a little speaker in it and have a little curated speaker playlist of... Of stuff they were working on, yeah.
I assume there's not, but no, like, word on if this is remaining an exclusive to the Playdate or if there's any plan to sort of put a version of it out anywhere else.
I didn't see, like, so yeah, I just got reminded of this from, like, the, you know, the email they sent out, the little promo one, but I have to imagine it's an exclusive.
You'd think so.
And it's, like, I think it's simplistic enough that it probably would need, like, to be not redone, but like,
yeah,
that's a fair bit of effort to convert to like a Steam game or whatever.
Mm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Well, I think that's going to do us for this week.
Oh, I have one more game.
No.
Can you not fucking hear?
I have one more game. It was a recommendation from friend of the show, Ruby Innes.
Oh, yeah.
This is a game that came out start of last year called Space for the Unbound.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this game blew my socks off, and I can't believe that I'd never heard of it.
A beneficial sockless game.
That's right. I'm going around barefoot.
The dogs are out on A Space for the Unbound. Yeah, I've heard this name, and I don't know what it is. I definitely have seen people mention it or whatever.
I feel like it must have come up in, like, indie game sort of stuff. But, yeah, it is weirdly, it's an Indonesian game.
I know what this is, it's set in the 90s.
I guess?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's... explicit, but this game, it is an indie game. The start of it is like...
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Indonesian indie game.
Oh, I see why you were making a point of that. Now I get it. Pretty fun. Euphoria. High school is taking drugs.
It starts off and it's like a younger girl and an older... Well, like a primary school girl and a high school guy, and they're friends, and they're writing this story together. And it's about this princess, and this princess dies, and her last journey is to, like, go to the afterlife with a little cat friend. And it's this is all presented. It's 2D, sort of like those PC early PC games like Cosmos Cosmic Adventure. Like, everyone's kind of like bopping around a little bit and sort of SNES-y, sort of like. Yeah. The second or third Secret of Monkey Island, Curse of Monkey Island sort of style.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an adventure game. It's like a point and click. You get stuff, you use it to interact with stuff. But you're sort of like, you've decided to help each other write this story. But then it introduces very quickly like this magic book that the guy finds, and you like use it on the girl, and it goes into her subconscious, and you like interact with some stuff in there to break her writer's block. Mm-hmm. But then it's also used a little bit later to sort of like interact with someone to like help them work through some repressed trauma.
It's like Psychonauts.
Yeah, Psychonauts.
Like Persona 5.
A little bit. But like obviously just like one little mechanic, self-contained. You just like go into it, walk to the end and like... talk to someone and it like, you know, clears through. So it's more about experiencing the concept rather than like heavy gameplay stuff. Anyway, you're doing this stuff for a little bit. You're walking around town and then you split up, you get back together. Oh no, the girl's fallen in the river and then you try to save her and then you drown or you seem to like go under and then it's like, boom, you've woken up and you're at a school desk. And your girlfriend, who is the same age as you, is like, wake up, you sleepy head, what are you doing? And then you're kind of in this different bit of the game where it's kind of presented in the same visual style, but now you're like walking around and your girlfriend's like, let's make a bucket list. Let's help a cat. And you're sort of doing these other things, but the whole time you're like, what happened to the previous thing? And the previous thing was introduced... So, like, the actual very start of the game is, like, here's the princess, and the princess dies, and here's the cat. And then it's, like, oh, that was a story they're writing.
Right.
This one then goes, like, that was a dream you were having. And so that's where I'm up to, this sort of like third, you know,
third unraveling. Right.
But like, I'm in. It's well written. It's like, you know, 2D, like, like old adventure game style. Mm. But like the animation's really fluid. Like it takes advantage of being a modern game. It's like made in FMOD or something like that, where it's pixely, but it's like, yeah, very fluid. The animations are really cool. Like that second wave of, yeah, those adventure games on PC. The setting is interesting. It's in Indonesia. A lot of cultural stuff is like brought to the fore.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think, yeah, the developers were clearly like, yeah, we're proud of this. We want to make this front and center. The sort of actual mechanics of the adventure game stuff, the puzzle solving, is really simple and really easy to get your head around. Without it being like too complex, it's not Monkey Island style of like, how the fuck am I meant to do this? It's like, it's pretty reasonable, pretty cozy games vibe again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm hooked. I'm interested. I did the tiniest bit of Googling because from what I'd heard from Ruby, like, don't like spoil yourself. Like there are levels to this, but yeah, people love it. There's also like a big sort of like psychological warning at the start of like, deals with some trauma, deals with some issues like this. So, and it hasn't touched on that stuff yet. So I'm, yeah, really curious to see where it goes.
Cool.
And it's just really enjoyable. And it's literally like I'm playing it on PC. It's like you go left, right, or you go up, down to like enter a door. And it's like Z for yes, X for no. That's it. Yeah.
Is this on Game Pass? Am I right in that? I feel like it might
be. Or it may be. It's definitely on Switch. Which may be the better place to play it if you like playing the Switch.
That sound like a good handheld game.
Yeah. Let's see. A Space for the Unbound. It's currently 40% off on Steam, which is why I got it there.
Mm-hmm.
It is on Switch, PlayStation, Windows, Xbox. is it on Game Pass?
It won't say on the Wikipedia page.
Yeah. But I highly recommend it.
Cool.
Regardless.
Cool.
Like I said, it's cheap now on PC if you're a PC player. And it is not telling me if it's on Game Pass or not.
You can take a guess and you've got a 50% chance of being right.
I can see Ben sending an email to Bill Gates with a photo of his dick. Again, I don't think this is going to
help. It's not going to help.
But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Like cool. I said, the sort of like uniqueness of the setting is, I think, adding a lot. But that aside, it's just well animated. The characters are well drawn and well crafted. And cool. I'm hooked.
I might try and get this when I get home, and then I can come back next week with an official ruling of whether or not you can get it on Game Pass.
It may well be. I have a feeling it is. I feel like I looked at it.
Yeah, right.
But I also have plenty of feelings about heaps of stuff, and I'm not to believe all of them.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I like that next week you will weigh in on if it's on Game Pass, not me.
Yeah. Well, you've got it already. You don't have a horse in the race. You're not going looking for it on Game Pass.
You don't think I'm
going
to do my due diligence after the fact?
Long after the fact?
And after attempting to do it and being unable to establish.
Yeah, it doesn't say.
If you yourself want to Google Space for the Unbound Game Pass, I'm sure that that will be possible.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, we will be back next week. That Princess Peach game is out on Friday.
I'm hearing bad things.
I played the demo and I don't really know how I feel about it, but I'm leaning towards not great.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to play Dragon's Dogma. Are either of you interested in Rise of the Ronin? Those are the big three that are coming out on Friday.
Not more than playing more Final Fantasy Rebirth, I have to say. But
it came out after the demo came out of that Princess Peach game that it was developed by Goodfeel, who made the Yoshi games,
and they've
done a Kirby game, I think, the Canvas Curse one. And they also made a game that never came out outside of Japan that I bought while I was there for the Switch. It's a sort of a spiritual successor to the Mystical Ninja games.
Right.
It's like a 3D action-adventure beat-em-up-y kind of thing. Never came out here, but I picked up a copy of that, and it's meant to be really good. And it's also meant to be pretty easy to get around the language barrier because it's just very action focused.
Right.
So I'm excited to fire that up.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's going to be a big week of video games.
About time.
Well, we'll see you next week. Head to our website, filthycasuals.com.au. you can find everything that we have going on there. We've got the Patreon. Get on there, support the show. Oh, yeah. Very much appreciated by the three of us, mm-hmm. and you get a bonus show every week where this week me and Ben will be recapping Universal Studios Osaka.
Oh, yes.
And, yeah, we always talk about movies and TV shows and all sorts of other stuff on there.
That's
same
right.
vibe as this, but just talking about different stuff.
Good time.
Get on the YouTube channel. We got all our videos on there, hundreds and hundreds of them.
So many videos.
Let's plays, one-offs, all
live
sorts of stuff.
Coming live up.
Shows
live
coming up.
Live show coming up.
Three of them. 7th, 14th and 21st. You'd have heard a thing at the start of the episode about it, but here's a thing at the end too.
Filthy
Please
Casuals.
Come along if you're here.
Yeah, filthycasuals.com.au for tickets or the link in the description.
Yep.
It's going to be fun.
Or the Comedy Festival website as well.
Yep.
You can get them all over the place.
You could Google it. Try booking. Hey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Google space for the Unbound Game Pass, and then after that, Filthy Casuals live shows April 2024.
Yes.
Check all that stuff out, guys. We'd love to see you there. We'll see you next time. And until then, as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals.
A lot of talking. Let me just freshen my breath.
Fantastic.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.